Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, halflings. It's me, Jas William Cartwright. And with me today, as always, is...
Luyendo Nati Lewis Nyawo, but everyone calls me Unati.
And...
Jeremy Cobb. But Isaac Betters calls me Baron Kebab.
God.
This is the wrong dungeon and the wrong dragon.
Full prince vibe? Woof.
This makes them even more black.
Cake glitches and pitches.
And lands in the cusp of a teaspoon.
Oh, no.
On a nat 20.
No.
You think this is just a game?
That's disgusting and I love it.
We're about to get into something real big now.
Baron Kebab. Or I guess Baron Kebab. I guess
Kebab.
Because I think it, or Kebab. I don't know. I spent a bunch of time in the Czech Republic, and apparently, like there, they pronounce it Kebab, which is apparently Kebab. Closer to how it's actually said in Turkish. So,
wow.
if we have any Turkish fans or people of Turkish heritage, please
like
let
that.
Us know. Yeah.
Okay, cuz cool.
in English speaking countries it's spelled K E B A B, but
yeah.
in like the Czech Republic it's like K E B A P.
Yeah, I've seen it spelled like that around London as well depending on what ends you're in.
Like
yeah.
BAP.
Yeah, so
almost.
That's yeah. why it's spelled like
wow.
that.
Wow.
Okay.
I'm hungry now. Mm. That's something that's been achieved. I just honestly thought you were saying K-pop at first, and I was like...
That was what I thought
oh, no,
when I first heard somebody
K-pop
say it.
K-pop stan, like, come chase us.
Yeah.
Now.
Baron K-pop.
Yeah.
They're unstoppable. I'm actually genuinely terrified of the K-pop stan. I don't know what to do with
this. It's madness.
Amazing.
There's a friend of mine who got really into Korean dramas.
I love
And that. On the back of that, decided... that they were going to get into K-pop. They hadn't actually really listened to K-pop. They just
okay.
decided they were a fan. And
yeah, I'm a fan now.
Then now they make all these K-pop references. I don't think ever intentionally sought out a K-pop song to listen to. So I've never heard any of the songs they're referencing, but they keep making these references as if I'm supposed to have any idea what they're talking about. I'm just like,
and I feel
okay.
Like... It's cool. it's not something like you can accidentally, like even as popular as it is now, it's not something you really accidentally fall into. It's like not playing a lot of K-pop on like Radio 1 or whatever. Do you know what
yeah.
I mean? So I feel
yeah.
like you're going to struggle to just, like your friend's expectation of you to understand these references seems, I'm with you, it seems a bit
weird.
Much.
Honestly, even if it was on the radio, I have never... listened to like mainstream radio.
I was literally raised
not allowed to listen to secular music radio. So like I didn't listen to secular music until I was like 16, and by then it was all classic rock. So like popular like pop songs. Basically, my music knowledge has some major blind spots as soon as you hit the 90s because I don't know. Like I haven't listened to most of what was popular during the 90s or the 2000s or even the 2010s. So,
well, if I ever have to take you on a pop knowledge quiz, I know exactly the category I'm going for because that might be the only thing I stand even a little bit of a chance of winning against you. Even then, I'm pretty sure you'd still beat me. But like, because my music knowledge is also not that great from that area either. So, but it might just be a little
you, like,
bit better.
You deliberately pick ground that I'll be bad at, but you also don't know anything about it.
But,
so
I figure,
just flailing.
Yeah, I figure
good
I just have to be that.
That.
Little bit less rubbish. Like, you know what I mean? I just
yeah.
have to kind of get it. I just have to kind of get it.
Yeah, exactly. You need me to be just slightly slower so the bear gets me instead, essentially.
Yes, that's exactly the premise. So welcome to this episode of Three Black Halflings. Today, we thought we'd do some Tales from the Table because we haven't done any of those for a while and I have got some doozies. And then we thought we would get into a discussion about story arcs, how to put them in, how to well, I say how to, like I'm an expert, as definitely not, but I've made a lot of mistakes in this area, so I feel like I can tell you what not to do, at least.
We all have. Well, at least I have, as
yeah.
well.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe Unati may have had a perfect track
record. No, I have.
Because it's a hard thing to do. It's a really, really hard thing to do, and I think that you've got to be... you know, the power of foresight when you have like four or five other people trying to also fuck with that story at every possible turn makes it, again, that little bit harder, you know? It's slightly easier when you're writing a novel and you're in control of all the characters. So we're going to get into that. But let's start off with some tales from the table. Who wants to kick us off with something that has happened recently? Jebba?
You go ahead.
I'm happy to hop in. So this is I'm probably never gonna do like a full summary of the whole campaign, but I figure this campaign has already been wild enough that every time we do like a Tales from the Table, I'll try and bring in like another installment to try and tell you the recent nice. Craziness. So I recently started a new campaign. For those of you who have been listening since at some point last year, you would have heard probably that my long running campaign ended rather abruptly and has since been replaced with a new campaign that Unati is actually a part of.
Yay!
Yeah, it's fun times. And
is
it's
it
like,
though, Jeremy? Is it?
Some of it's fun.
It's
some
a lot of
it's been
fun,
very
but is
fun.
It?
It's been surprisingly traumatic in a very short amount of time.
That sounds like a Jeremy campaign.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, what this is part of what being this show or doing the show has done is taught me that I bring my sensibilities in art to D&D. I am very much somebody. I usually phrase it as the harder daddy school of enjoyment. I really like stuff like our art that makes me feel really bad. Makes me feel something. First of all, I want to feel something because most of the time I just don't feel much when I'm watching stuff. It'll be like, oh, that was good. Like, especially with Oscar movies. But if something grabs me and makes me feel really bad and then makes me feel really good and makes me feel really bad again, and it's like a roller coaster, like a Tarantino movie tends to do that. I tend to enjoy his movies for that reason. But, anyway, I bring those same sensibilities to D&D is what I'm saying. This particular campaign is I've forgotten the terms, gothic, like a gothic horror mixed with like noir setting. So it's set in like this gigantic city. And basically there have been so many, I don't know if the word mistakes is what is used, but there have just been.
I feel like it's right.
Yeah, I don't. Okay, so the first mistake, I'm not sure, to this day, I'm not sure if it was a mistake or a feature, but the only discrimination in this world that I've established, at least in this city that I've established, because it takes place in like this city that's the size of like a country, is economic. And as such, it becomes an issue when three of the four players pick characters who are from a very low socioeconomic class, and the remaining player creates a character who is of the highest socioeconomic class. So that they literally are from different parts of the city and would have had no reason to ever even be in each other's neighborhoods. And furthermore, the organization to which this rich character belongs is actually based on the real life Pinkerton agency. Look them up. They're really interesting. Private security / private law enforcement agency that still exists, but they were huge in the 1800s. And like when I say huge, I mean they had more agents than the entire U.S. standing army by the late 1800s. It was wild. But anyway, this organization is like they are hired because they are so big, they are hired primarily by rich people to carry out rich people tasks, such as breaking strikes or blackmailing people or get, you know, that sort of thing. And thus are generally hated by people in the lower classes. And so I have a situation where three out of four of the party don't want to be in a party with the fourth member. Mm-hmm. And to make matters worse, there have been a series of blunders on the part of the fourth player that just make things so much worse.
Wow.
Do I know who the fourth player is?
I think you know without me having to tell you who else is in
okay,
the campaign.
Cool. Yeah. I know exactly who you're talking about. I was like, if I know them personally, then I know exactly who this is.
They decided, this person decided to make their super rich character like this super cool, self-assured, overconfident playboy type who like drives this souped up car and like has a pet dog who's been awakened, which is great, but it creates a lot of problems when you drive into the poorest part of town in your souped up, massively expensive car. Like a car that is more expensive than most of the buildings you're driving past. And people are just like, what? And you know, and he's like, wait, oh, this is a problem? The short story is, to kick things off, this guy on a routine mission ended up getting, this was not his fault, but he ended up getting in way in over his head with stuff that was like way bigger than this routine assignment. But where things started to go wrong is when he decided to, rather than try and fight his way out of the situation, just fully surrender, which resulted in him being modified memoried and basically sent in as a sleeper agent to the other to interact with the other PCs, and ended up resulting in a massive riot, which resulted in the police now investigating Unati's character.
Me nearly dying.
She also almost died. She went down twice in that fight. It was crazy. Also, his car was completely destroyed. The mob went outside and completely destroyed the car.
Consequences.
Just utterly destroyed the car.
Wow.
It eventually culminated in a sting operation after that. Like, they teamed up and started a sting operation, which again, they went in a little in over their heads. And one of the PCs fully died after one of their staff, it turned out, was actually a changeling who was on the side of the mob. Who, like, this routine surveillance thing turned into a mob conspiracy. Like, he accidentally uncovered a big mob conspiracy. And so the mob had a changeling in their employ who had previously replaced a staff member at this establishment where they were having this and having this fight. And the staff member attacked one of the characters and threatened to kill them if, like, people, you know, didn't let the mob member leave. And this guy's character was like, you know what? You're going to die regardless, so it doesn't even matter what you do. And the guy was like, okay, rolled a natural 20, hit the exact HP that the person had. Like, the person was at zero hit points. He hit the PC's max HP, insta-killed the PC. It's turned into such a fiasco. It's a very storied campaign. We're on session, I think we just had session 6.
Mm-hmm. Jeez.
And that character then sold their soul to Mephistopheles in order to try and get power in the Shadowfell to get back. They got brought back as, actually, thank you, Wizards, for releasing the new Gothic lineages, because that character has been brought back as a reborn. So that's fun times.
Very cool.
We are, I don't know how this group, I don't know if they ever really are going to become like a party. We'll see. It remains to be seen.
Someone might need to die first. A new character might have to be rolled, maybe. I feel like there's a lot of events there, like a lot of events that have led for one character to be very specifically not a part of the party. that's kind of wild. Like, I feel like if it wasn't a player character, you would have just killed that NPC. Do you know what I mean? If that guy was an NPC, you'd have just
removed them. It would be like, they're gone now.
Well, yeah, we're out. We're definitely leaving that NPC. And the DM's just like, no, they're still there. No, they're still there.
It's like an escort mission in a video game. You try to leave the person in the other room, they just phase through and they're with you again.
Phase through the wall.
Just like running next to you.
I'm still here.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
It has resulted in some great RP with the other three players just excoriating this poor guy. for his, even stuff that frankly is not his fault, is just getting ripped for it.
Listen here, at this point, we are vexed. We are very, very vexed by this even. Like, no.
That is too funny. That is too funny.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. What a tale from the table.
Yeah, his, I'll bring in more news later as events develop.
Yes, yes, please. That sounds great. Yudasi, did you have a tale? I've got a tale. I've got a tale.
My B squad big bad went down. Like one of my B squad's best henchmen went down. New Bethesda. They took her out. And they took her out in such a horrible, like, shameless fashion. And they looked me in the eye as they did it, you know? Like, they came
as they insulted
me.
You.
As they rolled the dice.
Yeah. Because essentially, like, I'd given my artificer has a helm of teleportation. And my big bad had managed to teleport herself 500 feet away from them. But then he also noted that she had dropped her dagger on the floor. And if he has an item that belongs to her, they can teleport straight to her. He waited for everybody to like make to hold their actions and get to him in a round of combat. And then they all teleported to New Bethesda and they destroyed her. Like they absolutely like, yeah, wow. Yeah. They ended her in a fashion.
Was it like some curse? Was it some curse of Strahd Recall
for
you? Yeah,
it was like, I think I counted out a total of something ridiculous, like 172 points of damage. And like Henry was like counting the damage for me, and I was like, "Motherfucker, I'm counting it. I know how many points of damage it is."
The insolence,
and like they were like making music the request. They were like, "Play some MF Doom." I'm like, "For fuck's sake!" Like, and like my whole campaign has got like all this beautiful orchestral fucking music. It's like Shaka Zulu, all this shit that I found. I'm like, "Fine, you know what? You get MF
fuck
Doom
it.
Today.
MF
there
Doom,
you go.
Fine,
you can
fine.
Like
You've
absolutely."
Heard this.
Eviscerate you them. But then they made us stupid. They went to go and raid the nearby military encampment after they knew that there were three sleeping dragons that had just been delivered. And then my warlock decided to play as a distraction, because my other little big bad is named Drusilla, based off of Drusilla in Buffy. Just nice. As mad, just as fucking insane. She was waiting for New Bethesda to get back, and they then decided to play the sounds of New Bethesda's screams when she died as like a distraction shot into the encampment. So naturally, Drusilla is now pissed and has three dragons at her disposal. So consequences.
Wow. Jeez.
Consequences.
And the thing is, that's what happens when you bait Yunati into playing like specific music. Like you can't like you got to just take it out and like take out the bad guy and then just leave quietly and calmly. Don't bait Yunati any further. She doesn't need encouraging to make you suffer and learn.
Yeah.
You should know this by now.
Yeah.
You should know this by now.
It's calming. It's calming. It's kind of like tied to like trying to build arcs. But yeah, they're gonna shit their pants.
Amazing. I have a question. Did the big bad drop the knife? Like, did you choose for the big bad to drop the dagger on purpose?
No, she was kind of ambushed from behind by the Warforged and went prone. And then at that point, she was backed in because she was inside. She was at the front of Sharka's kraal, so she was backed into the kraal, went prone, and had sorry. Don't move away from your mic. She was backed into the kraal, went prone, and then had nowhere to escape. So, like, she was panicked at that point as well, like, completely panicked, had no, like, what the fuck, how am I going to get out? All the enemies are that way. Her only plan was to, like, teleport out, like, get the fuck out and try make it. But, you know.
Damn. Teleportation really does fuck with everything, right? Like, I feel like the you've really got to be switched on as a DM as soon as your players get to a certain level where teleportation gets introduced, because it really does, like, that and scrying just really starts making things go crazy. You're like, oh, I don't know, where are we going?
What's happening?
Now
happening?
I have to improvise a whole thing.
Like them coming, like, my, you know, the big bad coming out of the loo. Do you know what I mean? Just like
sitting there
doing
with a magazine.
Their morning routine.
Yeah,
like, this is
hilarious. I've got someone in my chaos group who keeps trying to scry on one of the big bads, and I'm like, you're just scrying them in the morning. Like, they're just in their dressing gown, like, reading the paper. Like, they're not always up to nefarious shit. You know what I mean?
They've also got to, like, eat and
they're always, like, really disappointed. And I'm like, first of all, be happy that it, like, he keeps failing this friggin' save.
Yeah.
Which is so annoying. And also, just get used to the fact that he's not always going to be like, now this evil plan that I have. Yeah. Like, you have to be really lucky to catch them at the precise point they are, like, divulging information to their, like, lieutenants.
Yeah.
They don't do it all day, every day.
Exactly, exactly. Like, I had to really hold back on, because I know what my big, big bad is capable of. And I had to kind of hold back. I was like, do I, at this point, like session 7, just deus ex machina this fucking bitch out of here? You know what I mean? Like, do I kind of like just save her? But it's like, no, they will suffer later. Nah,
you gotta respect the corners that you back yourself into.
That's
as
okay.
a DM.
Yeah,
it's fine.
Own it.
It's fun.
And I was actually really happy for them. I was proud of them. I was like, yeah, well done.
I did a very similar thing with backing myself into a corner. This is my tales of the table. This is how my fighter rolled. I'm pretty sure, I've just tried to work it out again in my head, I'm pretty sure it was 10d10 of attack damage plus all their modifiers.
What?
So basically what happened is my fighter of my party managed to, because this is the chaos group and they like to poke the bear being evil hags, it's specifically Baba Yaga, who features quite heavily in this campaign, like to poke the bear, and basically ended up getting themselves cursed and their strength permanently reduced to like 5. So basically like their muscles just atrophied like you wouldn't believe, and they struggled to walk.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know what I mean? And like, no, you know, so all of their modifiers were down like so much. As a fighter with my like 5 strength, what was it, -3 or something? Pretty useless.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, I want to find like a way where I don't just retcon this because that would be boring. Like, I want to find, like, they have to overcome this curse. I don't want to do, but also I don't want to just like flat out nerf this fighter. Mm. And they'd already been to a town, which I took from Wildmount, which is called Hupperdook, which is where all these inventors live, these like gnomish inventors. And so basically I was like, okay, this is very plausible that one of them is working on a form of basically exoskeleton. And they paid like a bunch of money. They had to go on like a bunch of quests whilst this dude had -3 like to his strength. And it was like, they were basically just like, he was like a backpack. he's a minotaur, by the way, as well.
Oh. So wow.
Like, it really was, it's backpack. Quite the image.
He's
of
like
just
full
this really...
C-3PO and Empire Strikes Back, like towards like, the end, just
literally
being carried as a backpack.
Just, it's awful. And so they do all of this stuff. They finally get this exoskeleton suit, which I homebrewed, and it has some pretty cool features. And one of the features on it is that it has these crystals which basically charge it. And if you you can expend, I guess, like what you can use it once per day, where you roll a d6, and on a 1 and 2 you basically the machine just like shuts down for like 2 rounds. On a 3 and 4 you do like an extra d6 of damage for that round, and on a 5 or 6 you become effectively hasted for a round as the machine just goes into overload and you basically have haste. And so they get into this fight, and he's like, right, I'm just going to start punching the hell out of this. It was this like big metal construction thing. And he starts just punching this thing. He is going, okay, I'm going to activate this ability. I'm hasted now. And I was like, okay, cool. Rolled a 6. Sweet. You're hasted. Fine. So he goes as hasted, does 4 attacks. And then he's like, hold on, I also have action surge. And I was like, sweet lord. So he then goes and does 6. He has 6 attacks now. Then he's like, oh, I do have 2 weapon fighting and I haven't used my bonus action yet. And I was like, oh boy. So it was 7 attacks, mm-hmm. right? Plus his damage modifier, which is like +10 or no, not, it can't be, I think it was like +7 or 8 or something. Mm-hmm. Then he crits on 3 of the attacks.
Oh, wow.
So he ends up rolling 10d10 plus 7 times 8, whatever the hell that is.
That's 56.
56. So he adds 56 to 10d10 damage. It was, and I think he did like nearly like 120 or something at like level 7. like 100 and something points. It was ridiculous. Ridiculous.
Like, absolutely wasted, like, the target.
And more than half of this thing's hit points was supposed to be a pretty tough fight, and just flat out just floored this thing.
So with this version of haste, does it let them? It lets them attack. Because I think the regular haste, you only get, even if you have extra attack, you, with your second action, I think you can only attack once.
Oh sure,
it's like a special haste.
So basically, yeah, well, it's my own fault because I didn't really sort of say haste. I just said, like, you get, like, the machine works over time. You get an action for that round. Yeah. It's effective. I was thinking, oh, it's just like haste, but I didn't really read the rules of haste. And I was like, that's just what I put
now in. Now you
the
understand
thing.
Why they put the rules of haste.
Now I realize why they do that. Because seven attacks in a round is ridiculous. Yeah. Like, absolutely. It's basically like, I'm trying to think of what's the reference where, I feel like it's Superman or something where his fists are just like blurring and you just hear like, drrrr. Like, that's effectively what happened
like
in that like 6 seconds.
Matrix, yeah.
That's the Matrix. That's the reference I was thinking of where Neo's just like punching Smith or whatever and his fists are just like blurring in and out. And it's just like, all you can hear is like, do. That's effectively what happened in that 6 second period. He just went absolutely ham on this thing. And I was like, and then him to crit on three of them, out of seven attacks.
Wow. Is he a champion? Or is it just he just rolled a...
No, he rolled three nat 20s.
Whoa.
Like, I'm not... And he did it on D&D Beyond because they have a new thing where it's like a game world now where you can see everyone's rolls. And they just... Literally, they were coming up. He's like, dude, I'm not lying. I was like, I'm looking at the screen. It was just like, ding 20, ding 20. I was like, what's going on? Like, it was so wild. It was so wild. This thing, I was just like... It's called like the Gatekeeper's Construct or something. It's like this little death ball with like swirly blades. Mm. And it was like... He did so much damage in a round that I was like, I really don't even know how to narratively describe what happened because I don't think this thing would still be there. Like, I just, the amount of damage that you just did to like one specific side of its frame, it would be dead. Like, it would be not functioning anymore. It wouldn't be able to roll if you dented one side of it for like nearly 100 points of damage in a round. It's like, and then everyone else had their go. And I was like, oh, fuck.
Never mind.
Did it roll like really bad initiative too? So it just got dogpiled.
Oh yeah, it was fully lost. It was fully lost. That was like the first round of action. It was such a cool encounter that I'd planned. There was so much that was going to happen, and I was just like, "Mother, well,
never mind."
I tell you what, man, these singular opponent combats, you get them in video games, and they work so well. But as soon as you throw them into D&D, the action economy. Like, PCs tear through bad guys, like tissue paper.
And I keep trying to find ways because I prefer running them just because I think I always find that I'm, A, just more on it as a DM and, like, but I'm making more optimal choices and actually can think about strategy as opposed to just being like, I don't know, and just sort of throwing things out. Unless you, like, really plan for stuff, but then... They always find a way to lure it out or not fight it in where you wanted it to fight. Do you know what I mean? So it's kind of pointless doing that. You're right. It's really difficult to do single, unless you make it like ridiculously powerful. Yeah. Unless you go in like this is boss fight, beyond boss fight levels of difficulty. Here.
Or the setting, like you did with the dragon that one time where you had we're on a ship and the dragon can fly. Like if it's something where the terrain makes it a lot harder for everybody to just run over and just start just ripping this person to shreds.
Well, I think that's why like the Beholder and the Lava Lair works so well is that, you know, because it introduces so many elements to it with the non-magic cone.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? There's so many elements and layers to that, like... It then becomes a very... I think that's why it's such a popular D&D creature, because it's so easy to kind of add it into... You can pretty much add a beholder to like nearly any environment, and it intrinsically gets harder. You know what I mean? Because if you can't stand... Like, if you need to not stand in one specific spot, there's like a whole bunch of stuff that you could happen in that one spot. Do you know what I mean? So, I'm going to get it right. One day, I'm going to get it right. I'm still smarting from my vampire getting smacked on so hard by you guys. So
that was
savage.
There was a lot of build up to that.
You chased the vampire. Like, the vampire was like, I'm out of here. And you actively chased him. It was like, no, you don't get back here. Like you were like, and like literally he ended up getting fried in his own coffin.
Like a parent chasing a child, trying to discipline the child. The child's running away. Stop running away. The parent's like running after the child. Move your hand.
It was... Honestly, it was honestly awful. It was honestly absolutely awful. But all fun and games. So why don't we move on to some story arc stuff, talking about story arcs, how to maintain story arcs. I guess my first question would be, and I'm happy for either of you to jump in with this, is what's the initial stage? As in, do you ever find yourself, do you actually come up with a story arc, I guess would be my first question, or do you kind of happen upon story arcs? Because I feel like I've had a bit of a blend of the two. So Yunati, why don't you go, like, do you plan very specifically, like, long story arcs, or do you tend to kind of almost like, oh, it's shaping up and that's where we're going?
I guess it's like a mix of both. So what I'll do is, like, I'll plan like the ultra big, like the ultra like story arc of the campaign, like the big thing, like where they're where, like, you know, they'll probably land up in a year if we keep playing. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
you know,
sure,
that's
sure.
going to take a lot of revealing, a lot of growth. They're going to have to get some HP, otherwise they are dead. do you know what I mean? Like, it's like, you know, you're playing Link and you're trying to fight Gammon with like the tree stump. Like, it's kind of stupid. Yeah, that's kind of what I sort of do. I'll have that in mind. And then depending on what my players kind of bring to the campaign and their flavors and their play styles and the kind of characters they build, that will then start to inspire me about how we kind of get there. I think currently in my main campaign, Fexana, like, I've got one character who's like given me a gift in that, like, they love to play. They like the game more for kind of like stats and their build, and they play a rogue. But they don't really care about backstory. So, like, I have a character where I essentially can like just run my whole story arc through them, because like I just tell them what happens to them and they go, oh, I know that person. Oh, okay.
Okay, cool.
And they kind of like just say yes. Because like they're sort of like, look, I love to play. I've been playing for 20 years. I don't really want to make a whole backstory. You have at it. So I'm like, okay, that kind of helps me. I feel like that's a bit of a gift.
There's some substance in that way of playing. Like, I do believe that, because, sorry to butt in, just because I do think that, like, you know, I've had this a few times recently where, like, unless you really sit down at the beginning of a campaign or sit down very frequently, like sometimes like every, like in between every single session, it's really hard to like prep your players to the point where they feel like they have ownership over a certain thing. So sometimes in a lot of situations, it can be easier of just being like, yeah, you know this person because of then, and almost like let them role play it out and go like, oh, this is what happened in that scenario. How do you now feel about this character?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I feel like there is legs to that, as opposed to trying to like critical role it, where you've got like, you know, 30 chapters of backstory that like Matt's pulling at various strings, like, because you just go like, it's too much.
Yeah, but also what's kind of been really nice is that like I've had a few sort of, I've got a few players who come in and out of the game who are kind of pretty busy but want to play in the setting. So Nelly from Dum Dum Die comes in and plays a character, Slibagazi, every now and then. And then my mate Scott comes in and plays Willivar, who is a warforged, which was fun to put into a world of fucking steampunk robot walking around fucking 18th century fucking Africa.
Because why not?
But then what I sort of did is that I could make, because I set up that Alan like had like a connection with New Bethesda and like a mysterious kid in a memory. So I could kind of go, okay, cool. You want to play a Warforged? How about we just Full Metal Alchemist this motherfucker? And like, you're that kid, but completely like you've been like put inside this Warforged build, and you can come back and then start affecting Alan's relationship and giving information, but Alan doesn't remember because you both don't remember because of the crossover. So like it all, I'm like, okay, cool. So that will just help me. So now I've just got this really lovely little like helping piece in my campaign, which is a character who doesn't care about backstory. And it's just like, yay, thank you. Because then I don't necessarily have to like kind of stress too much. However, then you have other players who really care about backstory and really like care about arcs, and they like start, you know, throwing spanners in the works and shit. But you know, you just go with the flow, you know, improvise. Yeah. Like, I'm at a point now where like I barely, like, I plan, like, I know my world very well now and I know where they are, and I keep enticing them to like leave KwaZulu-Natal. But they don't want to, so that's fine. So like, I know that really, really well. So all I kind of have, all I really need to plan is like when they have encounters. The rest, I just kind of sit and go, okay, I know what this main arc is, and I'm just going to see what happens in this session, and then I'll decide what the knock-on effect is for later. Also, like the skill of holding back, because I could have Deus Ex Machina'd like Nubethesda out of there. Like I could, like in the mechanics of my world, like my big bad, like could have. No. And you're like, it's just like also knowing when to be like, not yet, not yet.
This HeadGum Podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers. Aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, well.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt.
Mm-hmm.
So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
That's the definitely the biggest lesson for me, is being like learning when to just hold back, because the payoff, the longer something goes on and the players just don't notice that thing that's happening or whatever, because there's several instances of that in both of the games that I run at the moment where I'm like, you know, oh, you just, okay, they're not noticing something. That's fine.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm sorry.
Like, let that
thing
happen.
Thought,
it's like, yeah, exactly. Yeah, you literally
look
say, like,
here.
Come get it. Come get
like,
the fix secret.
La, 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 la. I'm like, oh, fucking hell. Yeah, Jesus.
Literally. Literally. But, like, it's so much better then for the players when they're just like, oh snap, what, like, you know, that's, it's so much more rewarding. It's so much more rewarding. Yeah, what about you Jeremy, what's your
for me
to this, you
know? I don't usually come up with a whole overarching story for a campaign. It would be for like a specific like story arc that I'm like, it's something that I find really interesting, or that is directly tied to something that the players have already said that they find interesting. So there was, but I, what's interesting for me is like trying to balance the amount of pre-planning while still leaving enough room to be flexible and also not having a bunch of stuff that will just end up being useless for this campaign. I mean, theoretically, you can bring it into a later campaign and still use it then, but which is great. But like, I did that Feywild thing that I had made. I think I've talked about that on the show a few times. There was like so much there that it became very clear even before they even got there that the players were not going to see probably most of it. So it was like, yeah, it's fine. But, so I enjoyed coming up with it, but it's like, I know for a lot of people, there's a strong temptation to try and shove the stuff that you made in there. Like, well, I made it up, so it's coming in. Like, you guys gotta see it. But yeah, it's, I feel like that it rarely works out too well. But at the same time, I've had issues where The biggest, I think, I would say the biggest issue that I had where I planned something that really didn't fully work was I had introduced this character in like a previous arc, and I knew that this character was actually an evil person. And there were like hints that this not something was up with this person. But then there was, they kind of went away. Like they left that NPC, and there were hints throughout this whole subsequent arc that this NPC may be actually involved in this. And there's a mystery about, oh, this person disappeared a month ago. And funny enough, at the exact same time, this other mysterious guy showed up. In fact, this person this NPC that disappeared from before has disguised themselves before, and in fact disguised themselves as the exact same race of this other weird person who just showed up, and nobody knows where this other weird person came from, and there's like clues on top of clues on top of clues, where in my mind I'm like, it forms like a big neon sign pointing at this character, but clear this may have just been a case of not knowing the players, because I went to like it was over like a year building this story, and I was going up to friends and people who don't even play D&D and asking them, does this sound like a good story to you? Okay, so there's this guy, and there's this guy, and I'm like giving them the whole backstory and all of the clues, and they're like, yeah, that sounds cool. And then when the big reveal happened, not only were the players utterly like, what? Like they were completely flabbergasted, but they actually got mad at me. Because one of them got really mad because it happened to be their birthday when we were playing, and this reveal ended up completely ruining like what the party had just built. The party had just planned out an incredibly well executed maneuver, like fully executed it to a T. It was really well done. But what they had, the major blind spot was that they were working with the big bad the whole time and had never realized it. And so when the big bad just stepped in and revealed himself, some people were like, whoa, that's cool. And other people were like, what could you do this?
And then it was like, so clear.
There were so many clues. Like he disguised himself as a drow, and there's this talk about fire, and you see him use fire, and there's he's blue, and every like he's a blue dragonborn, and there's clearly something that happened with dragonborn in the past in this place, and the person who caused it, their name was literally called the Cobalt Destroyer, also known as the Azure Flamebringer, both of which are synonyms for the word blue, and like all this stuff, like you're Italian, the word for blue in your language is azzurro, that's exactly the same as azure, how did you not get this? Like, it's all this stuff where it's like he showed up out of nowhere, seemingly knowing exactly where you were, and kept throwing fireballs to attack your enemies. Flamebringer, maybe? Like, it was big everything. And it's like, how did you not get it? But at the same time, it's like, what I had to conclude was, look, I thought it was cool, but it has to work for the actual players. Yeah. So like, maybe no more big mysteries like that.
Top tip from Jeremy this week is if you find yourself desperately trying to explain something to your players, maybe it didn't work.
Yeah. Look, I mean, if I were to tell you now, it would be, you'd be like, ah, that's cool. Like if it was in a book, I guess.
Oh,
you could
yeah,
go back 100%. And be like, I get it. But clearly, none of it, like, it just was not sinking in for the players. So I had to just be like, I guess we just won't do something like this again.
I do think, though, that is potentially just about, like, knowing your party in particular, because I do think that, like, if you'd have tried that with our group, the Holothene group, Jeremy, like, I think you'd have picked up on, like, you know, that group of players would have picked up on it like that. Like, even without you, like, I feel like, you guys insight check every single NPC I put in front of you. Do you know what I mean? Like, I feel like you'd have got that, like, early doors. You'd have been like, I clearly don't trust this guy. We're not traveling with him. No, thank you.
Yeah.
So I think part of that is probably just, you know. But I do think, though, that what I would say the potential other route that you could have gone was, is that maybe it was about, like, finding a way to fit what you had planned into what they had done. Do you know what I mean? So like,
Do you know, and like that was actually flexible, funny enough, that is kind of what, yeah. And I think that That part actually was my favorite part of that arc, because I had created a kingdom that was just, and like I'd created enemies that were just gonna keep doing stuff regardless of what the party did. And so when the party did stuff that affected the bad guys now had to change their strategy. Mm. And it became like a matter of the party now having to consider what the bad guys might try to do. And the bad guys are now having to take into account, what is the party going to do? And so like even the whole fact that this dude revealed himself like when he did was due to the fact that the party had just steamrolled all of these bad, like all of these lackeys that he'd set after them, which was like, he wasn't planning on that happening. He's like, well, okay, I guess I'm gonna have to take things into my own hands here. Yeah. And went in there and lied his way through all of these interactions. But it was, that was my favorite part, is the, my favorite part of pretty much any D&D campaign as a DM is when the party start making decisions that force the world to change. And yes, it becomes actual collaborative storytelling on like a world building scale rather than just, yep, one storyline. And it's like, yep, when we started this, I knew maybe what a lot of the pieces were going in, but I had no idea how these pieces were going to end up. Yeah. And they ended up like this because of the choices that you guys made. That's my favorite part, I think.
Yeah, no, that's really true. Like, I didn't anticipate like needing to figure out. I knew that I had to work out how ancestors work, but then having a player who then decided to be able to walk with death and understand it, I was like, okay, how the fuck are ghosts gonna work here? Like, there needs to be something that like functions, that fits in with them. And I was like, okay, cool, that's kind of pretty sick. Except because now they're terrified of anything I throw at them. They refuse to like follow the voices that were drawing them into the river. But to be fair, there was mist and it was creepy, and they were on their own.
You mean like any spirit in Wagadu now?
It's like a child after they touch a stone.
Yeah, literally, yeah, that is literally what it is.
They touch
now,
a hot
literally.
Stove and they're like, uh-uh.
Even if
the stove is black, hot. I'm not touching it.
Yeah. Hot.
I don't care. Hot it might be hot.
Nope. Hot. It's funny actually that you said about the collaborative world building element, because I think that's, again, I feel like I went into DMing so kind of blind, which I think part of this is like how you've got to do it. Mm. Because I think you just won't restart if you wait until like this is the optimum time for me to become a DM. Because it just doesn't really ever arrive. Do you know what I mean? You're always going to be a little underprepared, I think, to take on a DM, and then you get like halfway through your first session and go, oh my God, what the hell? I think I'm exactly the same, but I guess the way I differ when it comes to making these narratives is that like I like to set up narratives sort of in particular areas, and I might give it a time frame. I might kind of let the time frame be malleable around how long it takes the players to navigate through something, but like the order of which players will then do something, meet a challenge, etc., is like very different. Like, very different. So, like, there is an overarching kind of arc in my campaign, but, like, I haven't set it out in a way that it's, like, you're going to go to this point, this checkpoint, then this checkpoint, then this checkpoint. It's how I started. It's how I very much started. And so the example is the campaign that I run with you guys. And Jeremy, you've been in that campaign since, like, the very first session we did. Mm-hmm. And the part of this arc I introduced in that session paid off, what was it, like 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, something like that. Yeah. Like, it was like over a year into having played. There were breaks and stuff, but like it took a while for us to eventually get to this point, which is that a very powerful figure in the world had taken a particular interest in two of the characters and had slipped basically one of them a note, basically saying like, you know, we need to have a conversation, there's some things I need to tell you, etc., etc. And just because of the like kind of breakneck speed of the way campaigns tend to, you know, happen, and the way things snowball, and the way players, you know, needs and wants change on a whim, it just didn't really get addressed for like a long time. And so the whole section, I don't know if you know this, Jeremy, but like I'd always planned that basically they would meet this character, they'd find out like a huge amount of lore about like the way the world works, and then they would go on to various other things. But instead it kind of almost happened in reverse, where they found out, or they sort of came across this place, which has a huge significance in the world and the lore there. Has a lot to do with time travel and things like that, which the players had no idea of prior to going in there. But I feel like it ended up being better that way round than if you'd have kind of got the information that time travel was a thing and that...
Yeah, I'm not wondering how we were going to get that before, because the guy you're talking about, basically, was this. My character started out having let himself be captured by some drow to try and infiltrate and get his hat back, his very special hat. And the also captured with me was another PC and this gigantic orc. And the orc was like super, like so much bigger than any other orc that like we'd ever seen.
Yeah, yeah. I'm pretty sure I described him as like, he's like 8.5, 9 feet tall, yeah. like shoulders as broad as Dennis.
Yeah.
Like, he was like several feet across as well as
right.
like tall.
He's huge. And yeah. this dude, we were like, he helped us fight a little bit and then he fully disappeared. Like he walked and then vanished, almost as if he walked through like a barrier, but we couldn't tell, and we had no idea what to make of it, and we were like, man, who was that strange man? And like, but I think for both Johnny and I, neither of us knew how to pursue that, because we were like, we were looking around for some trace of like where he could have
gone. Well, this is the thing, because so then he left a note in like a book that Johnny ended up picking up.
Oh, right.
And in the note, it said, go to this specific place, talk to this guy. But what ended up happening was in the interaction with that guy, Johnny became more fixated on what this guy had in a cupboard than the information that this guy could bestow. And so, like, the conversation that I'd planned where they would eventually go and meet, you know, this guy and da-da-da, never happened.
And he didn't show me that. He didn't show me that note, did he?
And he didn't show you that note because you guys weren't that familiar yet.
Yeah.
So there's a whole bunch of factors. And I remember at the time thinking, oh, how am I going to like crowbar them into having this meeting? And it's honestly like I am so glad that I didn't, because it worked out so much better. And so I think that, you know, you've got to be obviously flexible about the way you approach these things. But for me, it works so much better in my head if I set a bunch of events almost in my head, but just be slightly malleable about the time that they can happen.
Yeah.
You know, almost like a proximity trigger when like they get to a certain area and then things can sort of start to then unfold and happen. Because, yeah, it meant that I wasn't trying to like fudge something in and make something work. And then, basically from that point onwards, you ended up going on a mission to went to Thunder Lagoon. You were then tasked with finding this amulet, and you went to this place from which this character, this big orc, used to work and used to like live, and it conducted a lot of their experiments and all this kind of thing. And it ended up having huge ramifications that you hadn't spoken to this guy before, because you literally changed history.
Yeah.
Going there. So like it was, I remember being, there was like a full moment where I was like, as a DM, I was like, am I willing to completely change, not completely change, but like heavily change my ideas about this campaign? And I think it was pretty much the moment you started throwing stuff through the time portal. And I remember being like, am I prepared to do that? But again, I feel like because I was comfortable enough in knowing that certain events and things were going to happen, and that, you know, and I had an awareness of what it could trigger in the rest of the world, it ended up making like so much more sense.
Yeah.
Like the sort of the timeline of things. And so basically it ended up being that you, Jeremy, brought yourself to his attention.
Yeah.
Because you basically passed a note into the past which said, hey, come like help me, please, can I get my, like, help me find my hat, basically.
Yeah.
So past this guy in the past went, well, I have to find a guy called Dennis Goldspring and I have to get his hat. And so that's how your hat ended up getting stolen in the first place.
Oh. It, you like, Bill and Ted-ed it. You Bill and
Ted-ed
it.
I fully Bill and Ted-ed it. Like, oh. Because I was like, that's way more interesting than just like some drow happened to pick up your hat.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Agree.
Yeah. Because that was pretty much what you'd written in your backstory, which was that some drow basically took your
hat.
And so that's why I'm now on this mission to go and do something. So I was like, it's so much more rewarding now if like the whole reason that Dennis is on this mission is because of himself, and like it becomes this like infinite loop.
Yeah.
And it was just really like, that was one of my favorite sessions I think I've ever run and ever played.
That was super
cool. The penny drop moments of that stuff was just like, oh, snap.
Yeah.
And then so when you walked into this room with this guy, you were like, you looked up and you saw the note that you'd written. It was like framed. This guy had like, it was like this seminal thing that proved his work. It proved that time travel was possible because he had this note that you'd thrown back. And some ball bearings.
Yeah, I'd like to say, yeah, I was going to say a quick shout out to our friend Pete, who was the first one to pass something through time. It was his character's idea. He threw the ball bearing. And then when we found the ball bearing, that was when my character was like,
I gotta go back.
I start passing notes. I passed a business card. Yeah, I was like, yeah, that was great.
But yeah, anyway, that's a long analogy. But basically for saying that, like, I feel like I've made mistakes in that thing. And again, I feel like I've been a bit like Jeremy. I've made mistakes with NPCs who have come across in the wrong way, or who have relationships who haven't fully developed in the way that, not that I would have liked, but in like a more of a positive way for the players, more of a rewarding way for the players, because I was very kind of like set on some events happening, regardless of like how the players were coming into that event. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so I think like flexibility is the main thing. But like, yeah, for me, I definitely find like almost like proximity trigger approach seems to work relatively well. But again, like the thing is, you can't beat yourself up, right, as a DM, like if these things go wrong, because you have four or five people who are constantly trying to rip up the form book and just say, like, we're going to go wherever we want. And so, therefore, trying to write an overarching thing is so difficult.
Yeah.
I guess the positive side, I think, to the way that I try to do it is the fact that it gives you as players the opportunity to discover something huge way before I'd planned, and that for that to be quite a rewarding moment, which I feel like it was when you guys had come across this place where I hadn't planned for you to go for a long time. Do you know what I mean? Or hadn't, you know, planned at that point in the narrative. Yeah. So,
yeah.
Patience. Yeah.
I just love that you Bill and Ted-ed us.
Yeah.
Have you seen Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, Unati?
Yeah, years ago.
Okay. Because that
great time travel.
I was going to say, that is my, I think that may be one of my favorite versions of time travel in a movie. Because it's very much a closed loop. Like, things happen because, which it creates all these weird paradoxes where things happen because they happen. But that scene where they break into the police station is like my favorite scene in that whole movie.
And they're trying to avoid,
and they get in because they had, like, they're like, but we need the keys, but we don't have the keys because the keys got stolen. He's like, well, but wait, we still have a time machine. What if after this we decide to go back in time and take your dad's keys and then leave them right here? And they look down and the keys are there. I love that scene.
Yeah, I love that scene.
And there's everything
it's
after
so
that.
So good.
Hey guys, if you haven't seen Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, please go watch it. It's a good fit.
And actually, I watched Face the Music the other day. Really enjoyable. It's so wholesome and like it's really, really fun. Like it's really, really fun. And the dynamic, some of the dynamics they introduce, it goes in some funny ways. Again, there is just some of the most excellent deadpan acting. Like they find another character. It's just, go watch it. It's good. It's really, really good.
I heard the actors who play the daughters are really good.
Really good. Yeah. Really, really funny. Like really funny. So anyway, we digress as always. I don't know. Is it, like, I'm trying to think if there's anything I would say about smaller arcs. I guess here's the final thing that I'll say, and then I'll throw over to you guys. But the final thing I'll say is that I think always be prepared for an arc to finish early or go on longer than you were anticipating. Mm-hmm. I guess like the length or the kind of the time frame of the thing is, I think, what makes it then difficult. Do you know what I mean? Or makes it then potentially unrewarding for the players.
Yeah.
So like if it's like, hey, you need to go and you need to open this chest and the key happens to be next to the chest and they don't spot it, you don't feel like you have to force them to find the key. Do you know what I mean? Let them do whatever it is before they eventually come back and find out the key was sitting there the whole time. You know, because that'll, like, I feel like it feeds into the fact that they have agency in the world, that they have the ability to do anything, as opposed to then you prescribing something for them to do.
Yeah.
There will always be like an optimal moment where I feel like the streams cross and you go, oh, now's the time. Like, this is it. This is the reveal moment. You know what I mean? Like, you'll always feel it, I think, as the DM, where you go, oh, shit, here we go. Okay, this is good, this is good, this is good. But, like, don't rob yourself of that by, like, trying to cram everything in, because you've written it that way, you know?
Patience.
You want that moment.
Yeah, I completely agree. You don't want the arc to go on too long because it can really start to drag, but you also don't want it to be so quick that it feels insubstantial. So it really is about like being willing to either speed things up or slow things down as necessary, especially based on what your players are doing.
Yeah.
I think it's easy to speed things up in the sense that you can just add a few extra little bits in there, like a few extra helping hands, an NPC who happens to have a bit of information. Do you know what I mean? So you've always got the opportunity to speed something up like pretty much exponentially. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? You can finish an arc in a session if you really want to, or if you feel like the players really aren't digging it. You know what I mean? But like what you probably don't do is you don't have the ability. Well, you know, you probably could, but you don't really want to retcon anything that you've already done. Yeah. So I feel like it's always better to err on the side of patience when trying to build something like a substantial arc than rush.
Or like bamboozle them with many, many, many men and three dragons, you know?
Yeah.
And then they forget about the other NPC that is still a threat to the other NPC that they need.
That's a shout, you know, though. That's a shout.
I just like bamboozle distracted them. Like, oh, three dragons over here. Oh, I'm going to forget that there's a fucking person who wants the king dead. Great. Awesome. Just give them another threat.
That is so
stamp
good.
On their
that
foot so and they'll forget about their sore thumb.
Yeah, and then I'm like, what is she doing in the background? Because they all just think she's asleep. I'm like, it's been 3 days. Bitch is awake now. Like, she's out here
she
making
really
moves.
Tired, guys. Like,
she was really so tired.
She's making moves. Bless them.
One thing actually that I think we haven't brought up yet is talking to the players. I think communicating with the players out of game, saying, hey, how are you enjoying this? What are some aspects of this that you like? What is something that you'd like to see, you know, in the future? And also, what is your character thinking and that sort of thing? Because now you know what kind of stuff to include going forward. It gives you a much... And I don't think in most cases players come away being like, well, that was obviously shoehorned in just because of blah blah. Like, if you're
if it's something they've said, this would be really awesome. As soon as they see that thing, they're gonna go, oh
yeah, it's happening.
Yeah. Like, thing. And I'd be like, well, I wanted it to be more organic.
Yeah.
Like, look, if you don't know what I want, then I'm not gonna tell you because otherwise it won't be organic.
Why can't you read my mind?
And what a fantastic way to lead players, right? Like, I've got one player who's like, I love airships. Like, I just think they're really cool. I love airships. Airships, airships, airships. And I was like, well, okay, sweet. Airships. If I get them to a city and I want them to go to a specific area, there's airships in that area. And I know that at least one of them is going to be like, I'm off.
There is.
You know what I mean? Like,
you just hardcore reminded me. There's a YouTube channel that I enjoy called Crit Crab. And he just reads horror stories from RPGs. And one of the most famous ones he ever did was this DM who like forced the entire party on to just spend the entire campaign on an airship that was controlled by all these like epic level characters. And they kept sending them out on all these missions that were too difficult for the party to win. And so the epic level characters kept showing up and saving everything. And it's one of the most notorious stories on that channel because people kept wanting to leave the airship and he would like have the epic level characters threaten to murder them if they left. And then he would like force them into romances with these. It was the weirdest thing. This dude was out of control. But as soon as you said airship, I was like, I had full on flashbacks to the story. It's like
messed up version of Snowpiercer or something.
Yeah, it's the worst Snowpiercer. Like, it's Skypiercer.
Nobody wants this. Yeah. Nobody wanted this.
Yeah. Snowpiercer is the most depressing premise for a story, by the way. Yeah,
it is.
Ending, I feel like the ending is supposed to be hopeful, but it's not.
It's really not. They've just done season two of Snowpiercer on Netflix, and I'm interested to see.
Ooh, I've never even watched the show. I've only seen the movie.
It's pretty colourful, and it's fun. Like, it's fun. David Diggs kills it, you know? Diggs is infinitely watchable, so, you know, it's worth it.
Same premise as the movie?
It's been a long time since I watched the movie. Yeah, I really
but
don't
it's kind of been like
much.
Extrapolated. Same creator, same writer, everything. And he's just gone like, this is what I wanted to do, but I only had 3 hours last time. Or like, you know, 2 hours last time. But here's the rest of it. That's all he's done. He's expanded it. Yeah, that's it.
Hmm.
There you go. It's worth it. I would say it's worth it for sure. Well, I reckon we're getting towards the end of this episode. That was a good constructive chat. I felt like there was
some of that was probably all right.
Yeah, maybe it wasn't. All I can think about is kebabs now.
Yeah, some of it. Well, speaking of which, I want to order a kebab.
Shout out! I can't remember if I said Isaac Betters at the beginning, but Isaac Betters is the one who submitted that nickname. Thank you.
Well, you get
Isaac
double
Betters.
Shout out.
Yes,
I think you did.
Okay. Well, yeah. Congratulations on your second shout out, Isaac.
And that was submitted on our Patreon.
Yes.
If you want to give Jeremy a nickname, please feel free to head over there, and you can literally give him any nickname you want that, of course, he will read on a microphone for an audience.
Yes.
Like, that's literally the only rule.
So far, there have not been any that I haven't been willing to say.
There you are. So. There you are.
It's not a challenge. Also, it's a reassurance.
Yes,
it's a reassurance.
Yes. And it's not a call to action. Please.
Just a sea of slurs. and a bunch of them are in languages that none of us speak. So I'm reading them innocently, not realizing and that a whole bunch of people are being offended.
And we just see listenerships from various countries just falling off completely.
It drastically increases and then falls off. Everybody gets really angry and starts listening, and we got all this hate mail, and they all stop listening.
It's the end of the show right there. That's how we do. We brought it on ourselves. Yeah. We let the patrons choose. But on that same topic, we were actually discussing today that we are going to be, we're thinking about what our next round of one-shots are going to be. And actually on a recent episode on our Patreon, a little mini-sode that we did. Yeah, well, yeah. A few people have been saying Wakandel, so I mean, it's probably going to have to come back.
I think it's more than a few. I see a lot of, on the Discord, a lot of very positive feedback. Yeah.
So it's going to have to come back. But if you want to see things like Wakandel or any other one-shot ideas, we had a whole mini-show where we discussed ideas, and we're going to be having a vote coming up soon on our Patreon where you can choose what you want to see. So...
This is like
subliminal messaging.
It almost sounds like it's in a commercial. Like one of those really sensuous, high budget perfume.
Yeah.
I think only Bailey Sarian fans are gonna get my Aqua Tofana light reference there, but Wakandel.
If you want to go and vote for I'm making that. I feel like that's gonna be on a T-shirt or something. Wakandel, new fragrance by Cartwright. That's a good tea.
Carry it in your Poochie Rat bag.
Essential for anyone's Poochie Rat bag.
Your rat bag smelling a little too Poochie. Freshen it up with Wakandel.
It's the blackest smell. if you want to go ahead and vote, if you want to be able to vote on future one-shots, like we did our Curse of Strahd one-shot and the Slightly Lost Christmas one-shot that we did, and the various Africa-themed one-shots, including Wakandel, then you can go ahead and join up to our Patreon for as little as £2 or $3, I believe, per month. And you get exclusive voting rights and all the goodies. So go ahead and check that out. But until then, I hope you have a wonderful day, and we will see you very soon. So long, Shire folk.
So long, Shire folk.